Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T, find out what it means to me. R-E-S-P-E-C-T, take care, D-C-B.
Sock it to me.
Ooh, this doesn't come off, roll off the tongue as well.
Yeah, it's well, that's why they didn't name the song that.
That's a good point. Hey, everybody, how are you doing on this fine day? You are watching / listening to the Command Zone podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai. Today, we're going to be talking about Judith, the Scourge Diva.
Ah. And, well, we have mics in front of us. I don't know why I held up a fake mic
in front of a real mic. That's meta. So we're doing something a little different here. In the past, what we've done is we've let game nights come out. You see the decks in action. And then we do a deck tech or two about some of the decks that you saw in game nights. But we kind of thought it might be interesting to reverse that. So we're going to be, over the next couple of weeks, talking about the decks we're going to play in the next game night, so that when you watch game nights, you kind of have an idea of how the decks work and, you know, what they might be able to do as you're watching it. And and we think that might be a better way to go. Of course, as always, you can let us know if you agree and or like it the old way or whatever. But this time around, I'm going to be talking about Judith today. And then next week, Jimmy's going to be talking about his deck that he's going to play in game nights, which is Lavinia.
And that game that comes out January 25th.
That's right. So mark your calendars. You're going to be able to see these decks in action. But before we get into all that, we're going to talk about a bunch of cards, including new cards from Ravnica Allegiance. If you want to pick any of this stuff up, please go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone. If you use that affiliate link when you order cards for a deck, you know, if you want to build this deck or any deck at all, any cards you need for anything you've got, or you want to pre-order the Ravnica Allegiance stuff, you really are helping us out when you do that and helping keep the lights on, helping this podcast, Game Nights, Extra Turns, all of our content.
And we have a very special story that came to us in the email about Card Kingdom's customer service. A guy named Benjamin Pullen wanted to send us a feel-good story. He wanted to build a Modrotha deck over Christmas, and his wife ordered 50 cards and some stuff to bling it out. But unfortunately, the delivery, they left it on their porch, which happens a lot around Christmas time. And something else that's happened a lot around Christmas time is that it was stolen off of his porch, and they were super bummed out. They filed a police report. They said, well, there's nothing we can do about it. Card Kingdom replaced the entire thing for free, and they also threw in some extra swag and basically, you know, turned this Christmas around for this guy. He also has a six-year-old daughter. They love watching game nights together. So his wife used Card Kingdom because they sponsored us, and I guess that's how the message got passed along. So
that's a pretty great story because,
amazing.
Honestly, Card Kingdom's not responsible for the directly for the delivery, right? They use USPS or whatever they use, and for them to replace this stuff, it just shows what good customer service Card Kingdom has. Can't be more proud to have a really great sponsor like them behind our show. And another awesome sponsor that we have is Ultra Pro. You know, Ravnica Allegiance came out, so if you're going to build this deck today, which is Judith, you're going to want the Rakdos sleeves, the Rakdos deck boxes. You can get the Blood Crypt playmat. So you can get all the accoutrement that goes along.
Good word.
That makes your battlefield really themed around your commander. I know I always have a lot of respect when somebody's like, yep, I'm going to play my Simic deck with my Simic sleeves and my Simic playmat. And I always feel like, man, You got it together. I need to be more like that sometimes. It's like wearing matching clothes.
Yeah, their theme is on point. And the final way to support the show is directly through Patreon at patreon.com/commandzone. And we do something special every week. We call it one lucky patron on the show as a thank you. And that person this week is
Seth Thom. Or maybe Tome.
Tome.
T-H-O-M-E. Seth.
Yeah.
You rock.
You rock. Thanks.
All right, let's get right into it here. Judith, the Scourge Diva. This is one of the new Rakdos legendary creatures from Ravnica Allegiance. I'll read it real quick. It is one, a black and a red, for a 2/2 human shaman, legendary creature, of course, says other creatures you control get +1/+0.
Nice.
And also, whenever a non-token creature you control dies, Judith deals 1 damage to any target.
Any target. That includes players and planeswalkers and or creatures.
Right. So remember, it's non-token creature you control. But when one dies, Judith starts pinging stuff for 1 damage.
I like this a lot.
It's an interesting card. I think, you know, when I saw it, it felt a little underpowered compared to, you know, Vanifar or something like that. but also the two abilities are kind of weird, right? Like, one's an anthem effect that makes your creatures bigger. In general, you want to have a lot of creatures, but...
Like tokens?
Yeah, like tokens. But she says whenever a non-token creature dies, she does the other part. Like it,
right.
I feel like they could have taken the word non-token off this card and it would have been much better, but still not broken. That was when I saw it the first time, that was my first thought. Why does it say non-token? If it just allowed to do this, it probably would be too good in like limited or standard or something. It's not, definitely not, because it would be too good in commander.
Yeah, and black red does have a lot of token shenanigans in general when they make black red sets or in limited. It's
goblins
about,
make
like,
tons of tokens,
yeah, it's
right?
Like steal some cards with an act of treason and then sack it to something. You know? So they like sacrificing things, but you know, it's a little underpowered in that way, but I still think the effect that she has is great because it's very flexible.
Yeah, so I actually, as I was building the deck, and the way that works for game nights, I think we've talked about this before, but in general, obviously there's four players in game nights. Mm-hmm. Jimmy and I will be two of them. There's two guests, and the guests, we, just because we're on the show all the time, we let them choose from the pool of legendary creatures first, and then they pick, and then Jimmy and I usually powwow and go, you know, is there one you really want? If there is, you can build that. But in general, we pick. And so, you know, I didn't have the first pick. And I kind of, I looked at Rakdos, the showstopper.
Coin flippy.
And just from a production standpoint, dealing with all the coin flips and figuring out how to edit that production-wise and make it work on the show, I just decided that I didn't want to deal with that. And so I picked Judith, thinking like, it probably won't be the most powerful. We'll see what I can do with it. And as I built the deck, I was like, oh, this is going to be better than I thought. This can do some stuff.
I think this is better than Rakdos the Showstopper in terms of a build around.
Maybe.
Just because, I mean, Rakdos the Showstopper is a semi-board wipe on the stick, and it may limit you to tribal synergies. And this is everything black-red that wants to die.
Yeah. So which black-red, a lot of stuff wants to die. So
yeah.
That is what I settled on for the strategy of the deck when I was brewing it. It's an aristocrat-style deck. That's... We use Aristocrats as a shorthand because there's some cards that exist. Falcon Wrath Aristocrat,
yeah.
Cartel Aristocrat's another one. Mm-hmm. It basically means sacking your own creatures over and over for value.
Yeah, and usually the Aristocrats deck will also drain people of life and give you life or other, you know, like there's...
It takes advantage of death triggers, though, to do that generally.
Yeah.
So that was the general strategy going in, was really taking advantage of Judith's second ability, which is when a non-token creature you control dies, she starts throwing around one damage here and there. So the first thing you need in a deck like that is creatures that want to die.
All of them.
Specifically non-token creatures. So it did kind of change from the normal Aristocrats deck as far as like in those decks you sort of want to play cards that make a lot of creatures, like token creatures, like a card that comes in and creates two tokens with it is usually good in an Aristocrats deck, right?
Like a mere Battle Sphere would be amazing in this deck if it was token creatures too.
Right, so I was looking for creatures that weren't tokens that wanted to die, and there's kind of a suite of them. There's a grouping of cards that they kind of bring themselves back from the graveyard. They don't mind dying. This is like the most famous one, right?
Definitely. I think this one is, it's been reprinted a ton of times. You've probably played against it if you play a long limited. It's Reassembling Skeleton. It's just a one in a black for a 1/1 Skeleton Warrior. And it has an activated ability, one in a black, return Reassembling Skeleton from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped. So this is something that just costs the same as its casting costs. You can just repeatedly come back from your graveyard to the battlefield for 2 mana.
So it doesn't mind dying because it doesn't care. If it's in the graveyard, it's basically the same as if it's in your hand.
Yeah, he's kind of like those enemies in Mario where you jump on them. They're like the little turtles with the skeletons, and they're like...
Bloop, I just come right back.
They come right back, yeah.
Yeah. There's Nether Traitor, which is 2 mana for a 1/1 with haste and shadow. Shadow means this creature can block or be blocked only by creatures with shadow. But it says whenever another creature is put into your graveyard from play, you can pay black. And if you do, you return Nether Traitor from your graveyard to play.
Hmm.
I like these cards that go directly into play, not to your hand and then to play, more than I like the other ones. But, you know, we may still have to do the former, the latter, the whatever that. We may still have to do one of those a little bit.
That synergizes well, too, because things are constantly going to be entering your graveyard. And it only costs 1 mana to bring back. So later on, we'll talk about sack outlets, but you can gain a mana advantage sometimes by doing stuff like that.
Right. And Nether Traitor with Reassembling Skeleton, right? It's like sack Nether Traitor, sack Reassembling Skeleton. That's a creature dying going to your graveyard. Pay the 1 black. Nether Traitor comes back out. Pay the 1 in a black for Reassembling Skeleton. And so for 3 mana, you basically just cycled your cards in and out of the graveyard, which is what you want to do.
Yeah. Bloodghast. Black, yes. Black for a Vampire Spirit 2-1. It can't block, and it has haste as long as an opponent has 10 or less life. These are all things that really don't matter that much for Commander. But Landfall, whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, you may return Bloodghast from your graveyard to the battlefield. Not even tapped, just right there.
Yep. So it's Landfall basically does what Reassembling Skeleton does, or Nether Trader, but instead of those other mana requirements, you just have to play a land. Fetch land, mm-hmm. let it come back twice, right?
Right.
Play the fetch, it comes back, sack it. Now activate the fetch, brings in a land.
Right.
There are certain infinite combos with Bloodghast for infinite mana that certain people play in a lot of those landfall-y type decks.
Yep.
So it's a good card. And then there are two versions of Squee. And Squee Goblin Nabob, this is a Jimmy favorite, and Squee the Immortal.
I think Squee the Immortal is one of my new favorites because...
They're both cool, and they both sort of do the same thing in a different way. So Squee Goblin Nabob, if it's in your graveyard, sorry, it's 2 and a red for a 1/1. At the beginning of your upkeep, you may return it from your graveyard to your hand. So sacking it costs you nothing except for the 3 mana to cast it. That's mm-hmm. not as good as putting it onto the battlefield, but you know, you use the top cards, and then you use cards that are like, well, this is still good. It's not as good as Bloodghast,
right.
But it still works. And then Squee the Immortal is 1 red-red for a 2/1. And it says you may cast Squee the Immortal from your graveyard or from exile. So if it gets killed, you can just cast it again, similar to Reassembling Skeleton. This is actually a little better than Goblin Nabob because it comes into play. You cast it.
Just has a slightly harder casting cost. I guess these cards are, in terms of not going straight to the battlefield or you have to pay a little more to do it, they almost feel like worse gas for your car.
Yeah.
You know, like...
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Your car, but it's still going to make it run.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not like high octane, premium gas. Yeah, exactly. I think Squee the Immortal is quite a bit better because you might have turns where you want to sack a creature multiple times because you have the mana and whatever. Goblin Nabob is really limited in that. It goes to your graveyard and then your next turn you get it back.
Yeah, your upkeep.
Yeah,
so.
It's fine. It's if I was going to cut one, I would cut Goblin Nabob. But
even though he looks way happier and you know.
He's like hugging something, whereas... Oh, it's the same skull?
I think it's the same thing.
Yeah, it is. In both of them, he's got that skull. In one, he's just more happy with it. In the other one, he looks like he's about to throw it.
I love this. Squee the Immortal. You got to be pretty smart to live long as me, but not being able to die helps. It's true. I don't know how this kid became immortal. I need to study my lore more.
So, speaking of dying, we need these creatures to die for Judith's ability to trigger. And so, you know, you can't just... say, like, my creature dies. You need a card that allows you to sacrifice your creatures so that they'll die and you can start doing other things. So we need sacrifice outlets.
Yes. And one of the ones that we talked about, one of the cards that we underrated, and now Josh, actually I noticed a couple of these in this deck, it is Yeheni, Undying Partisan, 2 and a black for a 2/2 legendary Aetherborn Vampire. Has haste, and whenever a creature an opponent controls dies, play a +1/+1 counter on Yeheni, Undying Partisan, which actually goes kind of well with Judith if you're going to be taking creatures out and making a thing that people have to block. But more importantly, sacrifice another creature, Yeheni gains indestructible until end of turn.
We have talked many times about how a sacrifice outlet that just allowed you for free to sacrifice your creature at instant speed would be good. That's basically what Yeheni is.
Yeah,
there's incidental value in that. If other creatures in your opponent's control dies, it starts getting big. And I've seen games where it's big enough to be a threat.
Mm-hmm.
But really, you're playing it because you want to sack your Reassembling Skeleton and your Bloodghast and bring them back in. And Judith triggers and then triggers again and then triggers again. And, you know, Yeheni's just the enabler.
I'm thinking of a situation, too, where let's say your opponent has 3 blockers and X amount of life. And you start sacking things to Judith to start either pinging them in the face or to grow your Yeheni to kill their creatures. Kill their creatures, grow your Yeheni, and then hit them with Yeheni.
Yeah.
So if you know that you're not going to be stopped in combat, you could actually be doing more damage with Yeheni if you can clear some blockers out of the way.
Also, Yeheni gets indestructible when you sacrifice things. So it can be a good blocker, right? If you have Yeheni, a Reassembling Skeleton, just sitting there, and somebody attacks you with something big, you can block with Yeheni, sack the Reassembling Skeleton, and just basically 2 mana to save yourself a bunch of life or damage in that case. I guess you can just block with the Reassembling Skeleton too.
Yeheni does just keep going up in terms of its usefulness.
It's just way better than it looked. We were very wrong about the card.
Yeah.
The next card is probably the best card in the deck and is often the best card in the deck when it's included in a deck.
Yeah.
It's Skull Clamp. It's 1 mana for an artifact, 1 to equip. And it's an equipment, obviously. Equipped creature gets +1/-1, and whenever equipped creature dies, you draw 2 cards.
Yep.
So with Reassembly Skeleton, Squee, they all have one toughness. Skullclamp becomes, you know, pay two mana, draw two cards, and then you use your recursion abilities on those things to kind of keep, like, Nether Trader and Blood Gas, sweet, clamp one, clamp the other, get Nether Trader back out, get a land because you've drawn so many cards, get Blood Gas back out, clamp again, you can get into some pretty good value loops with Skullclamp.
Yep, and it kills your creature more importantly, because I think it's important to note that Judith just wants creatures to die, not for you to sacrifice them. Also, quick R&D note, they were like, this card would be too good if it was just one mana, one equip, plus one, and then the thing. So they're like, you know what, we'll make it minus one on the toughness side, so they get a little weaker.
They were trying to make a downside on the card, and they actually made
it
better.
They made it an absurd upside.
It would be so much worse if it was plus one.
Oh, it would be awful.
I mean, it would still be fine. I think it would still be a good card.
Well, I guess the draw two cards thing is still pretty appealing.
But it would be way worse. Oh,
man, black-red decks do love this card, including my own. It's Sadistic Hypnotist. 3BB for a 2/2 human minion. You're like, wait a minute, those stats suck. Hold up. Sacrifice a creature. Target player discards two cards. Activate this ability only anytime you could cast a sorcery. So this is on your turn only, but if you have enough things that can die and you can bring them back, you can basically strip people's hands away entirely, which is really brutal.
Really scary.
Yeah.
Just think with Reassembly Skeleton, it becomes pay two mana, get two cards from somebody's hand. You might do that three times, get six cards in a turn, just to, you know, take one player basically out of the game for a couple
of
turns.
Yeah. At least for plays off the board.
Of course, both the altars, Ashnod's Altar and Phyrexian Altar, are in the deck. These are the best sac outlets besides Skullclamp.
Mm-hmm.
You pay three for either of them. They're both artifacts. Ashnod's, you sacrifice a creature and add two colorless mana to your mana pool or two diamond mana. And Phyrexian, you sacrifice a creature and you add one color of or one mana of any color.
Yeah.
They're both awesome. And with certain cards, you can sort of endlessly recur or get into loops because then you're creating the mana to bring the thing back.
Yeah, great cards. Pretty much those two altars are a must in any deck that wants to sacrifice stuff.
Yep.
Another card I really like, and I...
both of these at the same time, yeah. Honestly.
There are two lands that allow you to sacrifice creatures, and it's High Market and Phyrexian Tower. So High Market, you can tap it to add one to your mana pool, or you can tap it to sack a creature and to gain a life. So it's a great way to protect things if someone's trying to steal it, as well as just activate Judith. And Phyrexian Tower, legendary land, you can tap it to add one colorless mana, or you can tap it to sack a creature and add black to your mana pool. That is actually very spicy.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden, look, now this land generates the mana you need to bring back a Reassembling Skeleton and do many, many other things.
Yeah, even just on its face, Phyrexian Tower is like, tap it, sacrifice Reassembling Skeleton, it dies, you get 2 black mana, Judith pings something for one, and then you use the 2 black mana, bring Reassembling Skeleton back. Like,
yeah, it's a great way to also ramp on early turns if you're able to get these cards out, because your engine isn't necessarily going on turn 3 or 4, but you may need to cast a bigger creature to get it going, and being able to sack something like a skeleton makes it, you know, that much easier to play your big spells.
All right, so we have a bunch of sack outlets in the deck, we have a bunch of creatures that want to die, so bring themselves back. And now we need another category here, which is like, you know, it's like other synergy. So Judith is giving you value when your creatures die, but one damage is just not a ton. You also want to get further value from death. So we've got a few cards in the deck that kind of also want your creatures to die.
Yeah.
So the first one is Grim Haruspex.
I was always at Haruspex, but that sounds...
Grim Haruspex. It's 2 and a black for a 3/2 human wizard. It has morph, and you can unmorph it for a black. That doesn't matter that much. But it says, whenever another non-token creature you control dies, draw a card.
Hey.
So now you're getting to those Reassembling Skeleton loops. You know, you don't have to go infinite. It's just you do it 2 or 3 times, draw 2 or 3 cards, deal 2 or 3 damage with Judith.
Yeah.
You start really getting your engine going with stuff like this.
I like to see cards like this kind of like an enchantment almost.
Mm-hmm,
just
mm-hmm.
one that dies easily.
Actually, I would rather it was an enchantment than a creature. But I guess you can sacrifice it to some of these other things if you have to, if you're in a pinch. So,
all right, next up, Pitiless Plunderer. I love it when I see uncommons in EDH decks because you're always just like, how did this escape my grasp? Human Pirate 1/4, whenever another creature you control dies, create a colorless treasure artifact token with tap, sacrifice this artifact, add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool. So now this gets nasty in this deck because all of a sudden, instead of making, let's say, 1 mana with a Phyrexian Altar, you're making a mana and something that can tap and sacrifice for any mana as well.
So you're think of Phyrexian Altar, that, and Reassembling Skeleton. Now I have infinite Reassembling Skeletons dying and coming back. That immediately will win with Judas because what you do is you sack your reassembling skeleton to Phyrexian Altar, create a black mana. That creates a treasure token. Mm-hmm. Now you sacrifice the treasure and use the black mana to bring the reassembling skeleton back. When it died, Judith did one damage to something. Now you do that over and over and just gun everybody down.
Yeah, and if you do it with Ashnod's Altar, you're still going to get the black mana from the Pitiless Plunderer, so you get infinite colorless mana.
Infinite mana and infinite damage if Judith is out. So that's a really good one. Pawn of Ulamog will do a slightly similar thing. It doesn't create colored mana. It actually doesn't create mana. It creates a creature. So Pawn of Ulamog, one black for 2/2 Vampire Shaman. When Pawn of Ulamog or another non-token creature you control dies, you can create a 0/1 Eldrazi spawn creature token. And Eldrazi spawn have the ability sacrifice this creature, add colorless mana to your mana pool. So it creates a sort of treasure mm-hmm. that only can be tapped for colorless. But again, you can get into loops, but they're not super easy to go infinite, but it's pretty easy to go a lot.
Yeah. And sometimes that's all you need.
Yeah. Like, you know. I don't need my reassembling skeleton or whatever, any of those recurring creatures, to come back infinitely. But if it comes back just 40 times or 20 times, that's still going to be enough to do a lot.
Yeah.
So
it's kind of crazy how reassembling skeleton is literally the best creature in the deck.
Yeah, it kind of is.
Yeah. Next up, Dictate of Erebos. We've seen this card many times before. 3 black with an enchantment with flash. Whenever a creature you control dies, each opponent sacrifices a creature. Each opponent obviously having mad value in Commander. Not to mention you're also doing damage. You're already affecting people's boards by threatening to get rid of their creatures or planeswalkers just by pinging them. So Dictate is an obvious run in any kind of deck that wants a lot of their own creatures to die.
Yeah. Yeah. It just, while you're doing your thing, you're really taking their board
yeah.
and just smashing it.
I've seen games just get lost as soon as that card hits the table because someone goes, I just can't do anything. Even if I draw removal for it next turn, it's too late.
Narset decks and those kind of decks that are going to have one creature that they're really banking on.
Right.
They just can't beat that card. It's really tough.
Edicts.
Okay. So I know what you're thinking. Because I was thinking this as I was building it. This is great. I can get into these loops and whatever, but Judith is doing one damage. So if it's not infinite, yeah, how do you make that impactful in some way? And one of my favorite ways to do this is, you'll notice it says, when another non-token creature you control dies, Judith deals one damage to any target. So mm-hmm. Judith is the source of the damage, which means I can give Judith death touch. In which case, one damage now becomes kill any creature.
You made another Tim deck, didn't
right.
you, Josh?
This is something I learned with the Tim deck, and it's very useful very often, as it turns out. So there's two go-tos. They're artifacts, they're equipment. They both give death touch. One we even made a little short comedy film about. If you That's haven't right. seen Kitchen Table Fables, you should just go into YouTube and type Kitchen Table Fables Basilisk Collar,
yep.
and it will come up. And the card, of course, is Basilisk Collar. It's one mana equipment, costs 2 to equip. Gives the creature death touch and lifelink. And then Gorgon Flail is the other one. That's a 2-mana equipment, cost 2 to equip, and it gives the creature +1/+1 and death touch. And both of these equipped to Judith now mean that when you're sacrificing any of your non-token creatures, Judith is murking a creature.
Yep, death ping, I yeah. guess, in this case.
If you have Grave Pact out, now everyone's losing a creature and you're killing a creature.
Yeah.
Like, it's pretty, it can get like, you can kill all the creatures on the board. It's not that hard.
You know, it's funny. Judith can also target your own creatures. So
it can be a sack outlet.
Yeah. For, so she's yeah. kind of your own sack outlet for any one power. If you have these collars on than anything, but otherwise your one toughness creatures all die to her.
Okay. So that's the sort of making Judith deadly category. Give her death touch. And then there are all those recursive creatures in the deck, this skeleton, goblin, nabob, all that stuff. But you have other creatures, and I wanted ways to be able to recur the other creatures that mm-hmm. are in the deck, or also make the reassembling skeletons and nether traders even more sticky, even more recursive. And so there's two cards that kind of help us with that. This is a Jimmy favorite.
I love this card.
Yeah.
I played it in my Neheb deck. It almost brought me back to win the game.
Yep.
But not far
enough.
It's
very powerful.
It's Balthor the Defiled. 2 black for a creature, a zombie dwarf legend. He's a legend. He's a 2/2. He gives all minions +1/+1. Pretty sure that does not apply to this deck. But black, remove Balthor the Defiled from the game. Each player returns all black and all red creature cards from his or her graveyard to play. So this is one of the single most powerful ways to get in a black-red deck to get everything back all at once. It's not Living Death where everyone gets everything back. It's black and red if your table has not got that many people playing those colors, and this is even better. But it doesn't really matter because even if they do bring a lot of stuff back and you have Judith out, you are set to go off
yeah,
immediately.
You can set up your graveyard in a way that like, oh, I get Pitiless Plunderer back and something else, and now on that turn, I'm going to go off with the stuff. Balthor is very, very powerful. Really powerful with the next card, which is on this further recursion category. It's Machaeus the Unhallowed, just reprinted in Ultimate Masters. 3BB for a 5/5 legendary zombie cleric. Has Intimidate. It also says whenever a human deals damage to you, destroy it. Which is
very relevant sometimes.
Yeah, which is nice.
Human's the most printed, I think, creature type.
Yep. But the big text is other non-human creatures you control get +1/+1 and have undying.
So vampires?
That means, yeah, undying means that when a creature with undying dies, if it had no +1 counters on it, you return it to the battlefield under its owner's control with a +1/+1 counter on it. So all of our creatures that have their own recursion, Reassembling Skeleton, Blood Gas, Nether Trader, Squeeze, and a number of other creatures in the deck will now bounce back from the graveyard immediately with an undying trigger. And think of, we keep talking about Reassembling Skeleton just because it's the best example. But think about Reassembling Skeleton. I sack it. It has undying. It immediately comes back. And I sack it again because it has a +1/+1 counter. It stays in the graveyard, but now I just pay the one in the black. So now I'm paying one in a black for it to come back every twice.
Right.
Which is, with Ashnod's Altar and things, very, very powerful.
Yeah, I think with Phyrexian Altar, you can sack it twice for free and you just get the exact cost to bring it back. So then that immediately is infinite right there.
Right. So with Judith, you just win.
I think, too, when you have these ways to gain mana when you're using this deck, and it's important to be like, I don't always need to just win when I do this stuff with Judith, because let's say you make a ton of mana and then you can pop out a very powerful spell or equip Skull Clamp a bunch of times, and that might just be enough to set you up to do something even bigger and better the next turn if you're not under immediate danger. And if you are, Judith is pretty good at taking care of that in terms of getting rid of creatures, getting rid of players' life totals, planeswalkers, Basilisk Calling her, all that stuff.
Yeah, it might be like, oh, I can do this. I can sack Squee, you know, 7 times with 7 undying triggers. He's going to come out 14 times. That's 14 Judith triggers with a Basilisk Caller.
Yeah.
I can take care of all the creatures on the board and deal 4 damage to somebody. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Like,
on a black-red deck, that's very good.
You didn't win, but you were basically saying, like, and next turn I can do that again.
Again, yeah.
So, pretty good. But there is combo potential in the deck. It's hard to build this deck without some combo potential.
Mm-hmm.
I don't generally love infinite combos, but as you're building synergy, you just find them. So I wanted to talk about some, and I thought it would be really crazy not to include this next card, which is a well-known combo enabler.
Yeah, it's Nim Death Mantle, 2 mana for an artifact equipment, and the equipped creature gets +2/+2, has Intimidate, and is a black zombie. And by the way, this actually combos with Machaeus because it turns them from a non-human. It's
into
not
a
saying
zombie.
It doesn't say in addition to its other types. It just becomes a zombie. Whenever a non-token creature is put into your graveyard from the battlefield, you may pay 4 generic mana. If you do, return that card to the battlefield and attach Nim Deathmantle to it. And its equip cost is also 4. So basically, it doesn't need to be equipped to a creature to see it. It just needs to be on the battlefield. If it goes away, 4 mana brings it right back.
Yep.
And so, you can get 2 of that mana refunded if you're using Ashnod's Altar to sack that creature.
So now, if, like you said, if you've got Machaeus and it's going to bounce back on its own, then you might be able to just pay for, like, let's say you have Ashnod's Altar, Machaeus, Nim Deathmantle, and another creature. You sack the creature for 2 mana. It comes back because of Machaeus. You sack it for 2 more mana.
Uh-oh.
Because of Undying, it wouldn't come back, but you pay the 4 mana you just paid, or you just made with Ashnod's Altar into Nim Deathmantle. It comes back. Now it sacks, comes back because of Undying. Now you're in an infinite loop of sacking that creature over and over. Judith's going to kill everybody with her 1 damage. It also works good with creatures that create other creatures. So there's 2 in the deck. I didn't put a lot because this isn't something I wanted to really do that much because it's an infinite combo. But if it happened to come up, if any creature that creates at least 1 other creature when it comes in and you have Ashnod's Altar will go infinite with Nim Deathmantle. It used to be that, like, you could do that, but what's happening? But Judith gives you the what's happening. She says every time a non-token creature dies, she deals 1 damage. So if you can just have a creature die over and over, you're going to da-da-da-da-da, say hello to my little friend.
The whole
table. And take everybody out. So the 2 creatures that I put in the deck that create other creatures when they come in are
Grave Titan
and Siege Gang Commander.
Both great cards on their own.
Which is why I chose those 2.
Yeah. Grave Titan, I think, is one of those cards where every time I'm making a deck with black in it, I always look at it and go, yeah, I could, and I probably should play it.
You're never going to be embarrassed to cast Grave Titan, even if it has nothing to do with your deck.
Well, it's 4BB for a 6/6 death touch, which is great on its own, but when it enters the battlefield or attacks, you put 2/2 black zombie creature tokens on the battlefield. Not tapped, just you get extra 4 power for playing it and for attacking with it. And it's death touch, so it's very hard to block.
Yeah, so this with Nim Deathmantle and Ashnod's, obviously you can sack the two zombies that come in when it ETBs for 4 mana, sack right. the Grave Titan for a 6th mana,
yeah.
and then use 4 of it to bring Grave Titan back out, gets 2 zombies over and over again. That works.
Yeah, and eventually you're going to get an extra mana, enough mana from Grave Titan where you don't have to sack the zombies. So you can essentially say, with this combo, I get infinite zombies on the table.
Right. And another thing I like about stuff like Grave Titan, because, listen, A, you don't always want to go infinite. B, you're not always going to have Nim Deathmantle. But, and I know Judith says non-token creature, but mm-hmm. you're still in a deck that has a ton of sack outlets and just wants fodder to sack. Because you might have Skullclamp Outer and other things like that, and you're just like, I'm just going to use these zombies. I'm going to attach Skullclamp, sack them to something, mm-hmm. and draw cards. Or still having tokens is good, even though Judith herself says non-token. Grave Pact and Dictate of Erebos,
right.
they still work if tokens die. So you can kind of get value off that. CGN Commander, similar thing. It's 3 red for a 2/2 goblin. When it enters the battlefield, it comes with 3 1/1 red goblins. But then also, you can pay 1 and a red, sacrifice a goblin, and CGN Commander deals 2 damage to any target. CGN Commander also synergizes with your Basilisk Callers and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of cross synergy that's the reason those are the two that I chose, because you can use like Marsh Flitter and some other things.
Right.
Pawn of Ulamog actually coincidentally will do the Nim Deathmantle thing too, because when it dies, it creates a spawn that you can then sack to Ashnod's Altar
to make more mana, right?
For the Nim Deathmantle to bring out. So it's also cross synergistic, as it were.
Yeah. I like all of these cards.
Yeah. So here's the thing about combo potential too, and there's a card I put in that may look weird on the surface, but there's 2 cards in the deck that you really, really sometimes want to get. So it's Godo, Bandit Warlord. 5 and a red for a legendary creature, Human Barbarian. It's a 3/3, but it says when Godo enters the battlefield, you may search your library for an equipment card and put it onto the battlefield. And then it also has text, whenever Godo attacks for the first time each turn, untap it and all samurai you control. After this phase, there's an additional combat phase. That part doesn't matter much. This I'm using as a tutor for an equipment.
Onto the battlefield, too.
Tutor an equipment yeah. onto the battlefield. And then it gives you a body you can sack
mm-hmm.
for some value. And so you can get Nim Deathmantle. You can get Skullclamp. I think on the show I've talked about many times just running Steel Shaper's Gift.
Yeah.
In a deck that only has Skullclamp in it. Because I figure if I don't have Skullclamp, I really want to get it. And if yeah. I already have it, I don't care if I have a dead card in my hand because I have Skullclamp, so I have a million cards. So this is kind of filling that same role because we don't have white in this deck. Can't run Steel Shaper's Gift.
Yeah, you're not. I mean, you have other tutors you could play, or you could just 6 mana and make sure you. I mean, you're almost. I feel like getting Skullclamp or Nim Deathmantle out, and those are your top hits if you're yeah. going to be tutoring in this deck.
And you're in black, so you're going to run Vampiric and Demonic, and you're going to have ways to find the key pieces. Yeah. That doesn't mean, again, I wouldn't necessarily play this to combo off all the time, but there are games where it's like, it's been going on a while, it needs to end. And also just getting Skullclamp just so I can refill my hand and have fun in this game again
yeah,
is
yeah,
worth
yeah.
something.
All right, this next category you typed as synergy adjacent. What did you mean by that?
So if you live in LA, and a lot of places, but LA in particular is known for when you're looking for a place to live, a lot of places will be advertised as Beverly Hills adjacent, which is like, we're not in Beverly Hills, but we want to put that name into our advertising so that you'll want to live here.
It's good
so
marketing.
We'll call it, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I wanted to call this synergy adjacent because these are cards that don't directly synergize with what the deck's doing, but they happen to work with enough stuff that's already going on that mm-hmm. I thought it would be fun to include. And this is really where the deck, you could, when you're deck building, you could take these slots and you could dedicate them towards more Nim Deathmantle combo type stuff.
Right.
There's a lot of things you could do, but most decks have, you know, 4 to 5 flex slots. And I like to try out some stuff in decks in these, you know, they're 58th through 63rd card or whatever. So 2 of them are threaten effects because yep. we're running 7 sack outlets, maybe 8.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I like this first one. This is a Jimmy card again.
Well,
you know why? This is to toot Jimmy's horn a little. Because Jimmy will play a card and be like, man, that card's really cool. I want to play that. So the next chance I have.
Well, I mean, it's great that you say that about me and about this card. But I don't know if you remember when I played this card in Game Nights.
Well,
I had to.
The card's cool. Maybe that usage wasn't
the best. The usage wasn't the best. In fact, I will say all of these cards that I love, I've never won a game with on Game Nights. Because they've all come with Mana Screw, Bad Keeps. In this case, sacrificing some of my own lands, but the card itself is Word of Seizing. It's 3 red for an instant with split second, so as long as the spell is on the stack, players can't cast spells or activate abilities that aren't mana abilities. And it basically says, as an instant, untap target permanent and gain control of it until end of turn. It gains haste until end of turn. Now, untap target permanent. You can steal planeswalkers with this. You can take lands. So it's actually got a little more flexibility. Just don't play it when you have a card that destroys your lands for tapping it at someone else's turn.
Price of glory.
Yeah, price of glory.
So I love Word of Seizing because Split Second and the fact that it hits any permanent, it's a real good combo stopper.
Yeah.
It's a real good, like, a player thinks they're going to win on this turn, and you play this card, and they can't win on this turn anymore.
Yeah, and you can sometimes take the thing that's making them win.
Yeah, a lot of times it's like, oh, they're going to, something's about to enter the battlefield, and Doubling Season is out,
mm-hmm.
and it's a Planeswalker. You just take the Doubling Season, you know, and the Planeswalker comes in, has normal loyalty abilities, and
just
it's like
swipe it.
Yeah, and it's like you got to give the Doubling Season back at the end of the turn, but they didn't just win,
yeah.
So you save the table from dying. But sometimes you can do better things, like take something on your turn, use it,
mm-hmm.
sacrifice it because you got all these sac outlets, and really set them back. So the versatility of this as a threat and effect I really liked in the deck. The other one is Mob Rule. It's 4 red, and you for a sorcery, and you choose one. You either gain control of all creatures with power 4 or greater until end of turn, untap those creatures and they gain haste, or you gain control of all creatures with power 3 or less, untap them and they gain haste. So you get all the big creatures, all the small creatures, whatever there's more of probably. And if you have Ashnods or something, you might get like 5 or 6 creatures,
mm-hmm.
sack them all, get some value off of it, you know, probably attack with them first, do some damage. It really can add up. Now, I chose these because everyone's probably thinking, well, why not Insurrection or something? Because it costs so much more mana, so much red. I figure Mob Rule is going to do what you want most of the time. You
right.
probably take the big creatures, and with Judith's ability, when stuff dies, you ping down the little ones. Or if there's enough little ones, you can maybe finish off the big ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just don't need to be sitting there with an Insurrection in your hand that you just cannot use.
Yeah, and even if you're trying to like, all right, well, I'm going to ramp myself to get there. 9 is still a lot of mana to ramp too. Unless you're going, I think it's 8. Unless you're going infinite, in which case you're already winning.
Right.
So.
And the last one is one of our misevaluated cards again.
Torment of Hailfire! Pew, 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 pew! X, black for a sorcery. Repeat the process, falling process X times. Each opponent loses 3 life unless that player sacrifices a non-land permanent or discards a card. So if you're doing this for 10 mana, that's pretty brutal. If you're doing this for infinite mana, it's, you win the game.
Yeah. And, you know, we were talking about all this stuff, all these loops you get into, and if Judith's out, she pings everybody down.
Yeah.
If Judith's out, maybe she got killed a couple times. Maybe somebody saw the potential or whatever. Well, with Ashnod's Altar, even with just like Mob Rule, steal 10 creatures, sack them all to Ashnod's Altar, make 20 mana, add 2 black to it.
Oh, yeah.
Torment of Hellfire for, that's not infinite or anything, but Torment of Hellfire for 20 is going to win a lot of games.
Yeah, and you just toll everything that people can't even, they can't even sacrifice those permanents. They start have to sacrificing other things.
Ugh, yeah.
It's rough.
Yeah, Torment is just good in a deck that can explosively create a lot of mana, which this one could, because sometimes even just, you know, low-case scenario is you have 5 or 6 creatures, just sack it all to Ashnod's Altar and cast this thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, cross your fingers. Like, it could work. I've seen it work. Okay. The last category I wanted to talk about was new cards from Ravnica Allegiance. You know, it's fun when new sets come out to try out the new cards so you get a chance to see them in play and how they do. There's cards mm-hmm. that were like, we think they're going to be awesome, as we've seen, and they don't end up being good. And the way you find out, you know, whether you're right or wrong about evaluations is playing the cards.
Yep.
So I always try and put in a few new cards to decks, and these are 3 of them. You can pick which one you want to talk about.
I'm going to talk about this
yeah,
one.
Yeah, that one's sweet.
Electro Dominance! X red, instant. Electro Dominance deals X damage to any target. Similar to Judith in terms of any target. And then, here's the real kicker. You may cast a card with converted mana cost X or less from your hand without paying its mana cost. Sweet.
Pretty sweet. Listen, if you... And there's
any
two
card.
Yeah. There's 2 things going on here, right? It's that it sort of cheats something into play at instant speed. It one-time Vedalken Orrery something, so of course I like it, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you pay red, and 6, you hit some. You deal 6 damage to any target, and you put a 6 drop, you cast it.
Yeah. You could cast Machias.
Yep.
You could also, I mean, it's
you
nuts.
Could instant speed Machias at the end of your turn and then go off during your turn, right?
Grave Titan. I mean, there's so many things. Even at the 3 mana spot, if you do this early on, it still gets another card out of your hand and gets your combo going. Maybe someone goes like, okay, he only has 1 piece of his combo. We have to be worried when he has 2 out.
Yeah, and he doesn't have Vedalken Orrery or anything, so we're going to be able to see it coming.
Yeah, end step, boom, here you go. Electro Dominance, kill the thing that's also stopping you from going off, and all of a sudden you're in the position to win the game.
Yeah, put my Nim Deathmantle into play at instant speed. You didn't see that coming.
Nope.
That kind of thing. Godo Bandit Warlord's a really good one, right? Because it gets that and your equipment into play at instant speed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I really like Electric Dominance. I think it's going to be in a lot of red decks. It's just the type of card that...
Especially if you're mono red. It just has so much value attached to it that red doesn't normally get.
I would consider playing a card that was red-red. You can cast a spell from your hand at instant speed.
Oh, by NX, whatever the CMC is.
The next spell you cast, you know, the next spell you cast has flash or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, Quicken is kind of that. It draws a card and it's one blue. But I would at least consider a card that was just red-red do that.
Yeah.
It's probably not quite good enough. If it said red-red draw a card and do that, which this kind of does. The card you draw is deal X damage to something.
Yeah.
So I like that card a lot. I think it's very good. The next one I was less sure of, but I do think it's good in this deck. It's Theater of Horrors. It's one black red for an enchantment. At the beginning of your upkeep, exile the top card of your library. During your turn, if an opponent has lost life this turn, you may play cards exiled with Theater of Horrors. And then for three and a red, you can have Theater of Horrors deal one damage to target opponent or planeswalker. So it's kind of like Outpost Siege or something like that. At the beginning of your turn, you exile the top card of your library. And then if during your turn, you can deal damage to your opponent, any amount.
Judith does that quite well.
Yep. Then you can play, and here's the real thing I think that makes it a little bit better than it looks. You can play any of the cards that have been exiled with Theater of Horrors.
Yep.
So let's say you played it, and on the next turn you didn't manage to deal damage to any of your opponents. And then on the next turn you didn't, and on the next turn you didn't. Well, now the fourth turn you do, you have access to all four of the cards that have already been.
Yeah.
So you could play one of the lands, then cast two of the spells. So you have a chance even if you miss a turn, whereas Outpost Siege, you have to play it in that turn, and then it's gone. So if you draw, like, you know, a counter spell, it's worthless. If you draw, I don't know, usually if it's a land, you'll play the land. But if it's a spell that's, like, 7 mana, but you've only got 5 mana, it's just gone. You didn't draw that card.
Yeah, I like Theater of Horrors a lot. It also has an activated ability to do damage and let you get there. But Judith's already going to be doing a lot of this. What you said, though, you get to keep the cards around. Even if you are doing damage on those turns, you're like, I don't want to play this card yet. It's Electro Dominance. I want to wait till I have more mana. Great. Well, you have to. The only downside is that you can't cast instant speed stuff on someone else's turn if you deal damage to them on that turn. You have to wait for your turn to do it. But honestly, this is the kind of deck I think wants to go off on your turn. So...
Yeah, I agree. And there's also a lot of little sneaky ways to deal damage. Like, you have Basilisk Collar, and just putting it on a squee and swinging is like, nobody wants to block that thing because it's like you're not losing anything and they're losing a creature usually.
Right. That's actually a good point. Your creatures don't matter if they're tapped or not. So you could, if you had an army of creatures, you could just swing at someone.
You don't care if they, you know, Nether Trader's got Shadow. It can't be blocked. Bloodgast, you don't care if it dies. You're going to play a land, it's going to come back.
Yeah. That's actually really interesting.
Yeah, so you and you have a lot of early drops. So a lot of times you play this on turn three, and on turn four you've got, you know, a couple of little creatures, and you just look around and be like, well, somebody you can attack.
Yeah.
And then the other times you have Judith's ability to kind of ping somebody for one just to give you access to these cards. So I do think it's good.
And I guess we can't forget the fact that she does give your creatures +1/+0.
Yeah. It does matter. I mean, Bloodgast as a 3-power creature is a lot worse.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot worse for your opponents, a lot better for you.
Yeah, this deck is cool. It kind of grinds people out in a number of ways, and you kind of get to choose your own adventure each time. Sometimes you'll never be able to attack once in the whole game. The other times, you're doing that and doing Judith stuff, so you're not as reliant on some certain parts of the deck to make it function, but you're still taking everyone down quickly.
And the last Ravnica Allegiance card we're going to talk about that's in the deck is one that's probably going to go in a lot of decks that have these colors. It's Bedevil. The art on this card is crazy.
I love Bedeviled Eggs.
It's Seb McKinnon, and the art is sweet. It's black, and red for an instant. It says, very simple, destroy target artifact, creature, or planeswalker. So it's just a better Hero's Downfall, right?
Yeah.
It adds artifact to the mix. Obviously, it's harder to cast than Hero's Downfall, but if you have black and red, Bedevil seems awesome.
Yeah, it gets an artifact, too. It's very flexible. I could see a lot of people playing this card just for its flexibility, especially if you're black and red, don't have access to white. You know what I'm interested in? Where's the card that says destroy target player? You know? Why don't they make one of those? I guess Tournament of Hailfire is kind of that.
Destroy targets players.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so that is the Judith the Scourge Diva deck.
Can I finally shuffle this?
Yeah, you can.
Oh.
I know it's hard to hold the cards and not shuffle. I was like, I've got them in order. Don't shuffle them. Does it feel good?
Yeah, it feels great.
Well, those Ultra Pro sleeves, you know, they always feel good.
They do.
So This deck is actually a lot of fun to play. I've played it a few times since we did the game nights. Of course, I won't give away the ending of that, but I was surprised at the power level. There's a lot of cross synergy, and you find things as you're playing. Is like, oh, I can do this. I can sack this to cast this early. You know, oh, I can steal your creature and do this things because just a little bit of threat and effects make it a lot more fun.
Yeah, having options too, I think, is always great. Even though it seems like a deck might be linear, if you can build the deck in a way that lets you take, you know, choose your own adventure, you know, which way do you want to go with it, Bandersnatch it, I think that's a lot more fun to play and to play again over the long run. I mean, that's kind of why you like your Vile Smasher deck, right?
Because
you never really know what's going to happen with the damage.
So, to the listeners, what do you think about the Judith deck? Are there any cards you think are must includes that we missed? We'd love to hear it in the comments. You can tweet at us. You can send us emails. Again, we like to take advantage of our brain trust. For people that have watched the episode, maybe months, years down the line, they can look into the comments and see some of other people's suggestions.
Yeah, or new cards that have come out since this episode has released.
For sure.
And hey, if those cards are something that you want to purchase for yourself, make sure you use our affiliate link, cardkingdom.com/commandzone. You're going to be buying the cards anyway. It costs you nothing except for maybe the extra 3 seconds to type that URL in, or if it's bookmarked, just clicking it. Buy those cards, get them shipped to you super fast. Again, they have incredible customer service and one of the best in the biz, undoubtedly.
Yeah, Card Kingdom is awesome. And our other sponsor, and I want to call out that I did put, we all did for game nights, we all put our decks into the guild theme sleeve. So this is,
it's
of course,
so cool.
Rakdos, which I think is one of the cooler. I'm just a red and black is a color pairing that I like. And so I just think these sleeves look sweet. And as Jimmy just said, they feel awesome when you're shuffling them. You know, in the past, these sleeves that have like printed backs
have been harder. Yeah.
Harder. Yeah. They've been like harder to shuffle and they kind of come apart more, but I've played this deck many times. The deck still feels great to shuffle, and these sleeves are not coming apart. Like, these things are very, very strong. You saw us, if you watched when DJ was co-hosting, we had DJ, who's like 6'3", he's a big dude, try and do the stretch test.
And he
could barely do it. It took him like a lot of pressure to pull these apart.
That's
so
cool.
Yeah, they are definitely high quality. So check out Ultra Pro products. Okay, now it's time for the end step, where we talk about something cool outside the world of Magic. I heard you reference it.
Yeah, that's right.
So I'm assuming that means you've watched it now?
Yeah, but I don't want to give anything away other than the fact that I think that this is the future of entertainment.
So we're talking about Bandersnatch, which is a Netflix... It's an episode of a Netflix series called Black Mirror.
Which is great if you haven't seen it before.
Black Mirror is sweet.
Check it out. But
I think we've end-stepped Black Mirror before.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is the new episode, but it's... Well, why don't you explain it? Just the concept of what the show
is. Right. So Black Mirror is sort of like an alternate reality
Twilight Zone-esque,
but very much on the dark side of things. And Bandersnatch is an episode that they released that is interactive. And it basically is kind of like a game in a lot of ways, but you're able to use your remote or whatever you access Netflix on to, at certain key points in the story, choose, are you going to do X or Y?
And it's choose your own adventure.
It's choose your own adventure. There are different endings. There are different ways to go about it. And it's very meta as well. I think Black Mirror has always been very good at that, sort of like a show that references itself within the show. And this episode is very much that. So I personally enjoyed it. I didn't think it was amazing, but I liked the concept and the execution. And I think it spells out a lot of what could be a big future for stuff on that platform in the future.
Yeah, I agree. I think the show was good. It was fine. I was entertained. I don't think it's the best incarnation of this idea, but it definitely shows.
Yeah.
It opens up a whole new avenue of possibilities where you're like, whoa, as you're doing it, you're like, oh, this could be amazing.
Yeah. I mean, imagine if it was tied to something that was more of a live show and it was like, hey guys, vote on something.
Oh gosh.
You know, you have your remote right there and it's not going to stop the process. But I think the idea of Netflix wanting to create more of a game environment and interactivity, I think they bought the rights to a certain card game, like,
oh really,
yeah, something like very basic or something like Monopoly or something, because I think that's kind of where Netflix might be going. And Bandersnatch is, I could totally see the Black Mirror guys being like, we want to do this, and Netflix being like, cool, this lines up with what we're trying to aim for in the future.
Yeah, very cool. So Bandersnatch on Netflix, if you haven't seen it, check it out. Another thing to check out is our sister podcast, The Masters of Modern. Alex Kessler and Ben Bateman, they talk about the modern format, all things competitive Magic. If you're getting into Arena, I've been playing a lot lately, and a lot of their mindset is really useful in Arena because it is like you're laddering and you're trying to rank up. Mm-hmm. And so that's just sort of a different thing than Commander players are used to. So those guys are definitely good to check out. you know, I've learned a lot just listening to their episodes about like, hey, in limited, you should just mulligan a lot less, or just little things like that can help you win, you know, 10% more games, which is a big deal. You earn more gold, mm-hmm. more gems.
In my case, it's about mulliganing more often because I keep awful hands. Unless I'm playing Momir Vig, in which case, bam.
You're good.
Snap keep every time, yeah.
So you can find the Masters of Modern if you just type that into the search bar on YouTube. They have videos. And also, you can find them right next to us at collective.company. Or you can follow them on Twitter. They're at the MMcast.
All right. Our editor for the show is Josh Murphy, a.k.a. Murf.
Murf.
There's a mode in League of Legends called like Earth Mode where they go, Murf. So that's how I'm going to say it, Murf, okay. Now on. Special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer, who does the awesome living card animations, both that start and end the show, as well as behind us here on the screen today. We have a little bit of Invocation Madness.
Yeah, this is Days.
Really cool, actually.
Pretty sweet.
Yeah, pretty sweet. So thank you. You can find Jeffrey online at Living Cards MTG at Twitter.
All right, everybody. Thanks for watching.
And we'll see you next time.
Peace.
For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.